I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes.
Hi, this is Ricky Wilde, and you're listening to Unsung Heroes. Thank you for joining us. Today, we are talking about Pop Don't Stop, the greatest hits of Kim Wilde. On the last episode, we talked about, it's a two CD set, and we talked about the CD one, and went through it track by track, and this episode is CD two. So lots and lots of stories, bringing up lots and lots of memories about some wonderful times in our lives, in our musical lives and creative lives. And who better than Lee Bennett to be chatting with us about it and asking us loads and loads of questions. Lee is a massive Wilde fan. He knows so much about our history, more so than we do, actually, I think. So it's an honour to have him in our studio and for us to be able to chat with him. It's so lovely to document all the tracks that we've created over the years. Yeah, and revisit them. It's a wonderful thing. So anyway, I'm going to shut up and let's get straight into it. Lee.
So welcome back. This is part two of the Greatest Hits Pop Don't Stop podcast on Ricky Wilde's Unsung Heroes with me, Lee Bennett, and Ricky Wilde and Kim Wilde. Hopefully you're still with us after we have taken a long meander down memory lane looking at disc one. We're going to kick off with disc two. And wow, do we kick off in a big way. We kick off with a song that started it all, Kids in America.
Oh.
Is track one of CD two. How do we feel about that one right now? Dying to sing it again, ready
can't
to go
wait
out.
To sing it again.
Seems like a lifetime away, doesn't it?
Oh, it's, there's yeah. A huge audience out there. Can't wait to go. Whoa!
We want a pogo. We're ready to jump.
I'm so ready for this. All of us. Oh, it's going to be so fantastic.
A magical song. So many wonderful memories of promoting it, and you know, all the different versions we've done, and all the gigs of where we've sung it, and it's just with us constantly, and
where's
we love it.
Where's the craziest place you've sung it?
It's always the last one we do. Mm. It's the most wonderful moment when we
pretty
finish.
Pretty nice at the Cocoa, and I'd say, in Camden.
Oh, Cocoa, yeah.
Yeah, that was magical.
The Cocoa.
And the Cigale in Paris is pretty astonishing when we get there. And, you know, when we play in Hamburg, Hamburg's a rock town. They love Kids in America. But, I mean, I don't think there's a place we've played that song and it hasn't been magic.
Yeah.
And I think there was a time right in the middle of my career where, you know, obviously there's only so long you can be excited about any song, doesn't matter how great it is. And then when I sort of got out of the music industry, then I sort of took time out and got married, had some children and got into horticulture and stuff. And then when I got drawn back with the 80s concerts, and I always, now I say, and I realise very clearly that Kids in America was gifted back to me by the audience. It was their enthusiasm, their love, their joy, their energy that they gave me back our song. It's just so exciting to sing it, especially now, of course, because of the last 18 months not being able to. Oh my God, I got even the thought of it is making me tingle.
Yeah.
Mm. It just keeps on, it's the song that keeps on giving. And, you know, especially for us, just seeing everybody, their energy and their enthusiasm and their love, it's such a beautiful thing.
A tsunami of energy.
It's just incredible.
incredible.
As soon as that pulse starts off, you know, and of course, I'm taken right back now as we're talking about it to being living at home with mum and dad. Rick had the wasp machine in his room next to mine, irritating me. I mean, he was an irritating brother, of course he was.
Oh, of course.
And then he was next door playing this bloody wasp machine, and and all I could hear was this da 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 da. And I was probably in my room playing some Joni Mitchell or something, you know. We were quite precocious kids now, I think about it, because, you know, at 12, when Ladies of the Canyon came out in 72, I think, Joni mm-hmm. Mitchell, and Mum and Dad had the album in their collection, and we were listening to that. And we were 12 years old or 11. These great, great albums that a lot of people wouldn't have been getting into until their sort of teens or later, we were sort of totally into it. 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were listening to some amazing stuff. And
Pink Floyd, all sorts, wasn't it? It's right across the board. It's a bit of rock and roll.
Yeah, some amazing stuff that Dad had in his record collection. Yeah. Really incredible. Yeah, it had Hunky Dory and all those albums that we wouldn't have had at that age, playing a lot in the album. So, yeah, I was probably listening to Ladies of the Canyon or something, and there's Rick with his pulse thing going on. So,
through my punky Gary Newman stage.
Yeah, yeah, going through his OMD.
So I loved all that in Ultravox. And, you know, John Fox and all that stuff, all the synthy stuff I really loved. But then obviously when the Sex Pistols came out, I Clash and Stranglers, and I was well into all that. So
that's it's kind of like America, isn't it? It's all in the mix. It's a real melting pot.
It just had all those influences, all the harmonies, and you know, all that was. I loved ABBA as well. So, and Queen, obviously, and David Bowie. So all these harmonies that were coming out, they were all influences. But those, you know, I've talked about this on one of the earlier podcasts about all the different things where all the ideas came from. And it's such a mishmash of different artists, and it's,
Like Street Life by you know, Roxy Music.
The sounds of traffic.
You know, that was sort of part of it as well.
Yeah, really inspiring. And Brian Eno again, incredible.
Never going to tire. Musician. It's never going to age. That song, be it in original form or when you play it live,
they'll be playing it on Mars.
It's an eternal one.
They will be playing it on Mars,
and it keeps getting new lives. You know, through Riverdale, the TV show featured it very prominently. It's been in so many TV shows. Yeah. One Direction have covered it. Everyone's covered it.
But it's almost famous now for being famous. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like the first choice on
X Factor.
So it's like the first choice song.
So I'll move us on, because I think there's been so much spoken about kids. And track two of disc two is a song almost that shares a DNA, I think, a bit with Kids in America. It's Candy Crush. It's got that energy to it. Similar kind of vibe. Written with Fredrik Tomander, who's a Swedish chap out in Mallorca, I believe.
Who we wrote Shine On with.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later.
So part of the Here Come the Aliens sessions.
Yeah.
How did that one come to be?
Well, I was out in Stockholm writing with Tom and Anders, and we were in their little studio, and I love writing with those guys. I hadn't written for a long time, and I was out there. I think what happened was I went on a sort of songwriting recce over to Sweden. We'd been told there were lots of great writing, you know, outfits camps, going on at camps and stuff. I think I went and introduced myself to several of them. I seem to remember going over there with my manager, Nick, and he'd sort of got a few meetings sorted out with me and some writers, and when I met them, I knew that they were the people that I wanted to work with, and so I started doing lots of writing with them. Candy Crush came because I said I want to write a song that's a bit like a Billy Idol sort of a white wedding thing. Let's go down that road. You know, everyone starts off with let's write a song a bit like that, or you know, something kicks it off. Billy Idol kicked off that song for us.
Oh. Yeah, I remember hearing it for the first time and really loving it. I thought, oh, this is so good. And then the middle eight came and it kind of dropped. And I thought, oh, it hasn't quite got the impetus that it needed on that middle section. And that's the bit that I added where it goes into the solo and it kind of goes up a gear.
All the guitar solos come in.
Me and Neil, we kind of
just
went for
that. Just keep the energy. So that was great because it really
all made sense
that.
After that. And for me, it felt like one of Kim Wilde Back to Her Best.
Yeah, and also, obviously, you'd over this period leading up to Here Come the Aliens, you'd been building this huge reputation for being one of the most awesome live acts, you know, doing huge number of gigs around Europe. And suddenly on Here Come the Aliens, you get to feature your live band on your album.
Yeah.
Which must have been great to be able to have them on record with you as well as on stage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely brilliant to have them, you know, represent. You know, we've been playing all these live gigs, to have them represented on the album was just brilliant. And then especially when we did the live album of Here Come the Aliens, which is just awesome, I think.
A lot of the stuff that we play now live, for me, I kind of prefer the vibe that we're emanating from. Those songs were like, originally when they were produced, it was all synths and drum machines and synclaviers and fairlights, and it was all very kind of syncopated, but it just feels a bit looser and a bit more rock and roll now, and we love that, and we wanted to bring that same energy consciously into Here Come the Aliens. So the obvious way was to incorporate, you know, have all the band playing on it.
It shows that at the heart of all of that production, though, are great songs still, because if you can, you know, make them sound something completely different in that setting, the song remains at the end of the day. You still got to have the heart of a good song there to be able to do that. If all that production is stripped away, so it shows that.
Love playing that one live as well. Candy Crushes.
Oh, amazing!
One
That's
of
so
our
much
top,
fun.
Our favourite ones to put in the set.
That's
now.
Fantastic.
So track three, we're going back to 2006, and this is sort of Kim's reintroduction to music again. It's Perfect Girl from Never Say Never.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to pronounce his name wrong, but Jørn Uve, known for working with Nina and co-writing 99 Red Balloons.
Uwe van Peterson.
So much more beautifully than I. So what's that period like for you, Kim, when you look back on it, in terms of that dipping your toe back into the water?
I was like real home mum at that time, two young children, got into horticulture, was feeling my way, being a married woman, away from the music industry completely, wasn't listening to pop music much. I really just took myself out of the equation. Then I got this phone call saying, would you like to do this number with Nina. That happened quite spontaneously, but that came about because of collaboration I did with I think it was a DTM motor racing thing over there. I don't quite know how I got talked into doing that, because it was a cover version of Born to Be Wild, which I was never been a huge fan of as a song at all. So I really went in very sceptical, and I was working together with Uwe, another producer whose name escapes me right now, and I went over there. I thought, you know, I think that we struck up a good deal to do it. I can't remember exactly how they got me on a plane to get me over there now. I mean, it must have been quite some battle. Anyway, I ended up over there. Loved how we approached Born to Be Wild. I just thought that was great. And all of a sudden, from having been quite indifferent to that song, I grew to absolutely love what we'd done with it. And then the whole thing with Uwe popped up. He said, are you interested in doing what Nina's done? She'd just done the Nina feat. Nina. I had been involved, and I became involved in that with Any Place, Anywhere, Anytime. And Uwe said, well, how about we do it with you? You know, go revisit some of your old stuff. Have another fresh look at it. See what we can do. You know, do you think Rick would be involved? Would he be interested? So, and then we got together as a three of us and put together that album. And it was really great, Rick, wasn't it?
Fabulous. We're
really inspiring. Yeah. Lovely working with Uwe. He's a complete nutter, you know, in all the best ways. Totally loves pop music. Him and Rick got on like a house on fire.
Yeah.
Perfect Girl's a great pop song.
And Perfect Girl was really good fun to do. Do you remember that Dutch audience who just kept singing it to us once?
That chant,
it was so funny.
But again, that came really quickly. The whole song came really quick. And I think all of us were just on such a high. It's when you're feeling that positive and you're around that kind of positivity, it really does inspire you to you really need something. You really want something to happen from that. And of course, it's bound to happen.
I mean, I think, you know, Nina put me back in the driving seat. I wasn't expecting it. I kind of was a bit fish out of watery at the time, you know, doing TV shows with her. You know, so shows sometimes a bit as well, which is quite sweet. But nonetheless, she reminded me that actually being Kinwell wasn't quite so bad after all, and that I miss the old girl. And so, yeah, she got me back in the driving seat, and I've got a lot of, you know, a lot of gratitude to her. I mean, she is a force of nature, Nona, and she kind of put me back in touch with Ken Wilde.
Well, we're very grateful to her for that. Mm. I never realised that was such a strong connection. He was really pleased. And Perfect Girl, I think, is great. You know, it's the third song on disc two, and that's going to be one, I think, that, you know, for the casual fans, shall we call them, that they're going to hear for the first time and be wowed by and go, this is a classic Kim Wilde song.
And a nice little video, too.
Fun video.
Really fun video. Lots of really cool chicks in it. Yeah, we were all cool chicks together. I loved it.
Good anthem, that one. Track four is Water on Glass, so the third single from the debut album, you know, following a couple of really big hits that you'd have with Kids and Checkered Love, a song about tinnitus.
As it turned out.
Yeah.
My dad wrote it after, you know, meeting several people with that condition, I guess. I mean, he knew about it and wrote it. That was the sound that he imagined it was like if you had it. He's never had it. I have it mildly. Cool little song, that Water on Grass. And we do play it live, and it motors along, doesn't it? It's very much of that era, the Kids in America era.
One of the question marks over that song is, this is a shout out to grabbing the deluxe box set of Pop Don't Stop the Greatest Hits, because it has every video you have ever made, and that is some accomplishment, pulling all of that together. But there's no video for Water on Glass. What's the story there?
I just do not understand that. I guess because it was the third, I just don't know.
Too busy? Maybe you were just out and about.
It might have been that I was too busy. It could have been, because literally as soon as, I mean, Kids in America kept me on the road for a solid 3 years virtually, and that's, you know, that's without having to sort of deal with Checkered Love. Yeah, so I think probably that was a large factor.
It was the early days.
I was probably in Germany all the time.
It was still pretty early.
Yeah,
you know, of the music video era, 81 was still the dawn.
It probably was. It might not. It might have had something to do with the old, you know, some people like spending a bit more money, and some people like spending slightly less. So I should think the financial aspects of it came. I imagine, you know, Mickey probably made a calculated, equation. Yeah. You know, he probably just thought, you know, I think I've spent the money what I want to spend on this.
And also in those days, videos, you know, you could spend, you know, half a million on a bloody video. I mean, God knows what, you know, Jacko's videos were obviously a different level, but, you know, even before that, you know, all the Duran videos and Ultravox videos, you know, like Vienna and stuff. I mean, they must have cost an absolute arm and a leg. So.
Well, a lot of ours did cost an arm and a leg, so you can understand probably why Mickey just decided to call time on the outgoings at that point. Yeah. Bless him.
So we're going to move on to track five and another new era for you back in 2011, which is the Snapshots era. So we come to a covers album. So intrigued to know how the covers album came about. And track five, the one that you've picked for one of the ones you've picked, is A Little Respect. A live favourite, of course, as well.
Yeah.
Playing that song live is just astonishing. You know, the reaction is like Kids in America. When that song strikes up, you see the whole place spark. And we've been playing it live and just getting such a huge reaction to it. And we've, you know, we changed the song a little bit, but not too much, you know, just the way we arrange it is unique to us. And Andy Bell absolutely loved it and has told us so, you know, so that's one of the reasons why it's on the on this album. It was fully endorsed by him, and he loves it, so that means the world to us.
And making Snapshots, when you look back on that one, that's tough, approaching a covers album, in terms of, I think you struck absolutely the right balance of really well-known, probably quite obvious choices, and then some real curveball ones in there as well, which again is so typically you two in terms of the approach.
Good, I'm glad you said that.
I've got nothing but great memories of promoting that.
To France is my favourite on that.
To France.
To France we put in the set live. Just love to sing that song. It's so emotional.
Yeah.
It's so full of hope and longing. I think longing is the word that comes straight to my heart when I sing that song. We might have to put that one back in again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, to sing the first ever song that I remember being emotionally touched by as an 8-year-old was Anyone Who Had a Heart by Cilla Black. And you know, literally at 8 years old in 1968 and hearing that song and just being in love with it without even knowing what being in love was all about. And Scylla's incredible voice, which was always so underrated. Mm. And I always really loved her singing voice. So to be in a studio and sing that was a big emotional day. Do you remember?
Oh, it was wonderful.
It was a really emotional day. Yeah, I had lots of moments that day. Yeah. But the thing I enjoyed most about singing Anyone Who Had a Heart was actually doing on the backing vocals, because all the backing vocals on that song are huge and massive and really challenging. And I'd always wanted to do them. I'd almost wanted to do the backing vocals more than I'd wanted to sing the song itself.
Track six is View From A Bridge, another live favourite. Awesome live.
Yeah.
Your eyes lit up when I mentioned that one, Rick. Is that a favourite of yours?
It's one of my favourites. I love performing it. I just love the vibe, love the lyric. You know, it's quite dark, but it's got a really kind of uplifting vibe to it, and it's just lovely to play on guitar. So yeah, I love playing that one.
I do as well. I absolutely love it. It's pure drama, melodrama, I suppose. Yeah, I love that about so many of our songs. I can just put myself into this little 3-minute film and just take every emotion out from that 3 minutes for that song before launching into a whole other 3 minutes movie, like Checkered Love, when you're bouncing around with a big smile on your face. And View From A Bridge, you're definitely not smiling, and it's definitely quite a serious, something's very serious is going on, and you're not altogether sure
dark.
What that serious thing is.
Your dad created some great characters lyrically, didn't he?
He was big on titles. He still is, he loves a great title. And Rick's like that, you know. He'll often come up with the title of songs that we've written together, you know, like You Came, Never Trust a Stranger. They're songs, they're titles, you know. Dad always drummed into us about the importance of a really great title to draw people in.
And his narrative's just great, you know, storytelling through the lyrics of songs like View From A Bridge.
You know, I remember being a child and listening to 24 Hours from Tulsa by Gene Pitney. I just thought, this is astonishing. Even as a child, you know, I remember thinking, now what happened he's 24 hours from Tulsa. Yeah. So what happened 24 hours? What happened then? Where was he? That's something that I asked. So I think it's really great when a pop song leaves you asking lots of questions. It doesn't give you all the answers. Shine On is like that. Yep. It doesn't tell you what this song is about on a plate. It alludes to the themes, very important ones, and it allows the listener to interpret. And I think that is the great skill of writing a pop tune, is you don't have to put it all out on a plate. You give it. It's a gift, and it's for someone to interpret.
If it's too obvious, it's almost insulting. You know what I mean? It's nice to have that something a little bit,
bit
of ambiguity. And
really like that. That's a good word. Track seven, another storytelling one, Love Blonde. You know, I mean, people would have seen that and heard it at the time and think, this is you. This is a song about you. And then you listen to the lyrics, and I don't think it is a song about you. But another of Dad's creations, clearly, in terms of what he must have been picturing.
Again, that was very Stray Cats. The whole vibe of that was Stray Cats. And, it just felt like a good old rock and roll vibe, and
it was, I think he just felt Love Blonde was a great title about the blonde phenomena, which of course is eternal. I mean, look at Thomas Paul.
He's the ultimate blonde.
There's something. There's just the blonde phenomena that just is has been in the past and will be forever more, and that I'm part of, and I'm very happy to be.
Great memories of that one. Track eight, we're going and back to Never Say Never and Together We Belong, which is going to be a terrific one for UK fans to hear again. Because I hear that, I think it sounds like a Pink song.
Yeah.
I think it could be a Pink song.
Yeah.
It's got, or Kelly Clarkson, someone like that. It's got that very modern adult rock feel to it.
Yeah.
A huge pop chorus as well.
Yeah, I write that one on guitar. I know that for for sure. Certain songs are very keyboard orientated. Yeah. That one was all guitar, and it just felt so lovely playing on acoustic and singing it on acoustic. I think I came up with the title on that one, Together
I think
We
you did.
Belong.
Yeah.
But I didn't write anything else. I think it was only that line. And then again, you smashed it with the lyric, beautiful lyric, and yeah, that's and that was lovely to play live as well.
Yeah, it was great. Lovely song to sing.
When that chorus hits, it's such a beautiful vibe.
It's a power
punch. Yeah, it's that lovely big... It's like you came with all those lovely harmonies, and it just really lifts you.
It does.
Kimmy, when she sings her own harmonies, is a really unique sound, and it just sounded like that on that... Together We Belong. It's just a beautiful sound when that suddenly hits in. So
the harmonies for us has been an integral part of what we put together.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about it too often, but it's really integral. And
we spend a lot of time on harmonies.
We spend a huge amount of time on them, and we love arranging them. And many of them are melodies within melodies. Mm. They don't actually become like a third or a fifth. They become another song within a song, and so I think, for instance, You Came, I think there are some very, very not obvious harmonies throughout You Came. And I remember Kirsty McCall telling me, and she said, I love the unique approach to harmony that you have put on that song. It's what makes it shine. You could have gone a really obvious harmony route, but you went this other route, and so I always remember Kirsty appreciating that.
Yeah, little discords here and there, it always sounds lovely and interesting and fresh, you know. And that was and especially the last chorus on Together We Belong, there was a key change, and that hit Kim's vocal right at the very, very, very edge of where she could sing. And I love that. It just has this real power to it.
And emotion.
And emotion. It is just beautiful. So, I love that song and I'm very proud of it. I look forward to performing that again one day, hopefully.
Yeah.
A new audience are going to find that one, I reckon, through this release. That's definitely going to have
it's definitely one of my personal favourites, that one, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Mm.
We're now going to talk about an album I don't think we've touched on yet, which is Come Out and Play. So you're kind of back from Never Say Never. You've sort of made a commitment to be back on the scene, as it were, and then Come Out and Play is what a banger of an album. You capitalize on that live reputation that you're building still at this point, and it feels like a real live record. And Lights Down Low is the first single and track 9 on this.
Come Out and Play, inspired from one of the songs on there, which we ended up calling Hey You, which was originally called Come Out and Play. It was a real celebration of having spent this previous years honing our skills as live musicians and as a band, which is obviously, as you can see from the cover of the album. So it sort of tells you everything you need to know about what's inside. Lights Down Low was it's a great one to play live, actually. It's a sexy little pop song with it was a great start to the rest of the campaign for that album. Come Out and Play. I've got special memories of that album.
I played it on the way here in the car. Played it for a little while, and I've forgotten how amazing King of the World is.
King of the World came when I was working. I mean, some of the songs like Come Out, like Hey You and stuff, they came in Sweden, and King of the World was one of the songs that came really quickly, like Rick was saying, when something really good is happening. And I remember I just felt literally, physically, like I had something, like some kind of wire or connection between me and something else, like the universal energy or something. And I remember just feeling like I was automatic writing. I wasn't even thinking about it. It's just this automatic writing started happening. So I always, I always think of that.
Something spiritual going on.
The line about going to rock and roll before we hit the floor, that's an incredible line. It's such a powerful one. Love it. Track 10 is Cambodia. What can we say about that one? it's the first record I ever bought, so it was my introduction to U2. Back in 1981, wow. With my £1, off I went to Woolworths,
yeah,
and bought that as a single. So it has a very special place for me, and I think it's the one when Kimu mentions the French gig in La Cigale. I seem to recall when you were doing the Aliens tour, they wouldn't let you stop singing Cambodia. It just kind of went on
doing that
and
chart.
We've been at a few gigs where the chant won't stop, and that's really beautiful. Yeah,
yeah, it's
happened
mad.
In Paris. It's crazy. Happened in Holland a few times, and in Germany it happens. It's happened a few times, and it's quite difficult to know how to stop an audience when they're doing that. So if you want to stop them or not, we've let them take control at that point.
If you were listening to the first episode of this podcast, we talked about a banned music video, which was Say You Really Want Me. And actually, Cambodia was also banned. I don't know if you remember this back in the day. It had to be edited because apparently the snake crawling across your leg was far too erotic for some.
Oh, my
and
God,
it was
yeah.
banned. And what a difference between eras from 81 to 87, I think, when Say You Really Want Me came out, in terms of the limits that you could go to.
Oh, isn't that funny?
And what you could push. But, you know, snake crawling over leg was was all too much.
I remember...
Again, you know, it wouldn't have crossed my mind. You know, pearl necklaces and snakes. I hadn't got a clue.
Please listen to episode one to understand
that
clearly,
reference. I was just at the mercy of these pervy video directors. Oh, yes, get one on the floor, there's a snake on my leg. And I didn't think of it at all. I just thought, oh yes, well of course that would be happening in the jungle. The jungle of life. And Rickles, you know, all made up with white paint all over his face and everything. Hilarious. Yeah.
Do you remember that video?
I do remember that video, That was
Fun times.
but the actual song, I was so pleased. I remember that being a massive relief for me, that song, because we'd had three or four releases, and each one had gone not as well as the other one. So they'd all gone, you know, obviously Kids at number two, Checkered Love number five, Close. Water on Glass.
I'll correct you in a minute, keep going.
Something like that, anyway. They were all sort of going down. And I thought, oh God, you know, and pressure on. And then Cambodia reversed that trend. But not only did it go higher than the previous single, which was a major relief, but it was actually a down-tempo song, and up till then, all Kim's tracks were kind of quite rocky and quite hard and tough and fast, and for us to actually do a more down-tempo was quite unusual, and so it's lovely because it really showed Kim's diversity, and it's lovely hearing your vocal so
apparently
forlorn.
It's your signature song in France, I'm told, in terms of, because it sold more than other stuff. So it's thought of in the way that Kids is thought of, or Hanging On is thought of, Cambodia in France.
It's featured in quite a few French movies, and as I say, sold a million there. It's a big song in France, and when we play it in Paris especially, the reaction is phenomenal. It's up there with the reaction we get from Kids. And
yeah, it's so strange, like, because we do so many gigs in so many different territories. You know, Cambodia obviously was more successful than a lot of the other singles that came out, but we kind of forget that, and so we just sing it, we just perform it as we normally would, and put it in the same place in the set. And of course, you know, now we're a lot more picky, and we really sort of think about where they go now, because which depending on where we are in the world.
Lovely. Track 11. Now, this is an interesting one. So track 11 is Loved. So this comes about really when you are properly on hiatus, as it were, in 2001. And
did it come out with a greatest hits of some kind?
There was
another
sort of record label attempt to push
it. Actually, I remember being very involved in that greatest
hits. Terry Ronald was involved.
That's right.
Yeah. Co-wrote that with you.
I love Terry.
That was a very lovely greatest hits package, actually. That was, you know, again, we got very involved in it, much more so than the previous one. I was really happy with that, and there was a lovely booklet inside, and some beautiful photographs, and some lovely, very personal, and then that track sort of came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Well, Terry came down to my house. I had a studio in my house at that time, and we spent a couple of days writing, and Loved was born, and I programmed it up and it all sounded lovely. I was really pleased with it, with Terry doing his guide vocal on it, which was amazing because he's got a lovely voice, Terry. And so I played it to Kimmy, and Kimmy said, yeah, I really love that. So then we recorded Kim's vocal on it, and then Terry had played it to Ian Masterton, and Ian did a mix on it, which absolutely nailed it, and it sounded so good and so strong that and that was a massive hit in Belgium.
Yeah,
so
it was.
So whenever we go to Belgium, that's like one of the
that's
big
the ones we put in.
Yeah. Whereas we actually don't even normally perform that, do we?
No, we've done it acoustically a couple of times. Yeah, but yeah. I'm glad it's on the album.
It's lovely to be there.
Yeah, amazing.
It's great to have it on there.
So track 12 is another personal favourite of mine. And first time I heard this song, I blubbed like a baby. It's Pop Don't Stop. It just, for me, it's like,
yes,
it's the soundtrack of my musical life, at least, written by you two, of course. It had to be. Scarlett's involved in this one as well, which is lovely. And perfectly appropriate to have the album, the Greatest Hits album, taking its title as well.
Well, that actual song took a while to write, funny enough, because we had like I think about two or three different top lines on it, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then you kind of took it away and said, look, I've got this idea, this mad crazy idea for the chorus.
Yeah.
And you started Kim came in and sung over the top of it and singing it to him. I was thinking, I didn't really understand it. So what is the lead line? What's the harmony? Is that harmony you're singing? No, it's a lead line. Oh, right. So what's the harmony doing? And I remember being really confused by it. And so we kind of like spent a little bit of time recording it all. And then the longer it went on, the better it sounding. And then we tightened it all up and it just sounded wonderful.
It's unusual for us. The song came about in, I think, two or three different stages. And Scarlett had written some great lyrics for a slightly different version of it, and I took it away and was inspired by Pump It Up by Elvis Costello, and I just said I fancy a kind of a real punchy chorus here, like, and that's who inspired the chorus. And then it became obvious that it was a love letter to pop music itself, and then that's when it actually started to make sense. We didn't know what I think.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, I think at the time, initially, its first incarnation was a much more personal one, and we
wanted it to be about a journey, our journey of pop.
But then it became a journey about us, but also about pop more generally.
Yeah.
So we depersonalized it, or at the same time, it was very personal.
Again, it was a bit more global, wasn't it? And
I'd always wanted to write a song with pop in the title.
Yeah.
But I love Deadmau5 as well. So that's where my inspiration came from for that whole intro with all those chords and stuff. That is all very Deadmau5. And
this is also a good opportunity to, we talked about like remixes that you don't really remember from like the Love Moves and Love Is era. The stuff you did on Aliens remix wise with some of the singles.
Oh, bless you. Thank you, Lee.
The complexity of the pop Don't Stop, bringing in Cambodia more boldly than it is.
That for me, it was a lovely opportunity to highlight some of our achievements, I think, and it's just nice to just put a little spotlight on them. It's nice.
Lovely work.
Thank you.
Track 13, we're about to come out and play, and it's Get Out.
Oh, I love that tune.
Pete Such Kirtley. A cool one to play live. Oh, so rocky, fabulous. Punchy, strong,
great
attitude. It's got Kim Wilde written all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah. Did you meet Pete Kirtley? That's one of the co-writers involved.
Yeah, I was writing with him.
Okay.
And he played it to me, and I just loved it.
Because he'd written Hearsay's Pure and Simple, I didn't realise, which obviously was a massive song.
Great writer. And,
great writer.
He played me the track, and I remember phoning up for Rick and saying, I think we've got a smash here. It's a great one to play live.
Yeah.
And it'll be a great surprise, I think, for a lot of KW fans or people that have liked some of my stuff. They'll love this one.
Yeah. Great.
The next track is definitely going to take them by surprise because I don't think lots of people will know that you covered It's All Right by E17 from Snapshots, which is track 14.
That was a bold choice. Yeah, that was fun to sing live.
Well, we just love this track. I mean, we love E17, and we were like kids in a sweet shop. You know, Rick came up with the title name of Snapshots. Perfect title. And then we were like kids, like, oh, what are we going to do then? What songs can we choose? You know, it really was so much fun. And we loved E17. And
I follow Tony Mortimer on Twitter. Amazing writer. Stay Another Day. I mean, God, it's just a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he is a legend. And that first album they brought out was fantastic.
Great that you picked a boy band song. I thought that was a really niche idea. You know, you did a girl band one as well because you did some Sugar Babe stuff. And there
was a great song. Is a great song.
It worked. Yeah. Really made it your own on Snapshot. So I think that's another one that people are going to discover. Back to Aliens again, and track 15 is Birthday, which again your remix of that is off the chart.
Off the chart, isn't it?
Oh, that was fun.
And there's a great bit, the video that Sean did for it as well.
Amazing.
Was so cool.
Yeah, amazing.
A fun live one, I imagine.
Back in the day, Scott had her own band. We wrote about 6 or 7 tracks, and of which I think 3 may be on Aliens. I just thought that they were such good songs, and we'd both been listening to them sporadically over the years. And when we started recording Aliens, I just happened to play some of those tracks in the car, and I just thought they could be revisited and brought up to date. A few changes were made and a few lyric changes, and it kind of took a new pop tune.
Love singing that song. It's a mouthful. It's a hard song to sing.
Yeah,
a lot of my songs are very challenging to sing.
Yeah.
I Never Trust a Stranger, very challenging. 4-letter word, very challenging. Birthday, extremely challenging. It's like going into a sort of marathon. Wow. You have to go into training for singing Birthday. So I better do that quite soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad the other track, that one of the other Scarlet songs that didn't make Aliens the first time but did on the reissue, was Fight Temptation. That's a super punchy song.
Yeah.
Fun, another attitude-y one that you can strut around the stage.
Kind of energy to it.
And Stereo Shot, of course, that was the same thing. That was around that area.
Yep.
So it's funny how you can write a song and years later, I mean, it must have been about 10 years, I suppose, wasn't it? Before that was reintroduced as an actual proper release. And a great song's a great song at the end of the day.
And Here Come the Aliens was an album, you know, I was talking to Rick about this recently. It did take many years to come to be. It didn't just happen because we kind of hit gold. Yeah. Or hit a rich seam, although we did. But it was many years in the making, that album. And it really is one of my all-time most favourite albums we've been involved in making.
Yeah.
And props to Scarlett for the artwork too. Not only is she songwriter on it, but you know, sings on it, but so too those gorgeous.
And she's
pictures.
Our yoga teacher when we do the tours, don't we?
Yoga teacher too. Amazing artwork on the Here Come the Aliens, and all obviously really inspired by my own personal experience of being in a field and seeing something astonishing in the sky. And and I sort of said to Scarlett, if you could try and capture that in a sort of that sort of 50s
Attack kind of the 50-foot woman or whatever.
Retro artwork. I would love that. And she just nailed it.
Oh, she's an incredible artist.
Track 16, we're moving on. This is one of my another personal favourite of mine. It's Come Out and Play's Real Life. What a gorgeous song. It's an emotional song.
They played me when I was working with Freddie and Anders over in Stockholm. They played me this song and I fell in love with it. What a beautiful song, a joy to sing. It was, it had been recorded before, and I just said, we've got to record this. Yeah. This is a beautiful song.
I think it's going to be one of the revelations of this collection.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's going to stand out for people who aren't who are going to be shocked that
actually,
they've
missed. Actually, it's a bit like a killer's track, isn't it, Rick?
It is, yeah. Oh, very much so.
It's very like a killer's track.
But it's such an emotional lyric, too, in terms of the story.
It's a tough one to deliver, especially for Miss Wilde here, because you were often, you know, Scarlett would have to finish off singing it because you kind of lost it a bit on a couple of occasions singing it, because it really does hit home lyrically.
Again,
you know?
I listened to it in the car and I was hit by it. You know, I've heard it hundreds of times, but listening to it again,
it's a very emotional song. Yeah,
powerful gut.
Yeah,
in the gut feeling when
deep.
You listen to it.
Yeah, deep.
Oh, I'm glad you say that.
Big meaning of life song. Sounds like.
Yeah.
Track 17, your second single, is Checkered Love.
Yeah, you know,
fun one. And that's had some incarnations in its time. Shield is somewhere.
Did a lovely
acoustic version of it, which you kind of played with around. And I know we've talked before about, you know, play it like it's, what's your dad say? Play the melody, sing it as it's meant
or go the jazz route.
Do something wildly different.
Or the country route.
But we love
that at Christmas.
It's sort of a folk route, I like to call it. A folk route from the Shield.
Country route was lovely at Christmas on your live, your winter, Wild Winter Stream, when you did that as the country version. That was beautiful.
That was a lovely thing, a lovely moment during the lockdown.
Thank you for doing that for us all in lockdown. We were all super grateful to have that.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's lovely for us to be able to get together and sing again, because we hadn't done any gigs obviously for all that time, and it's just lovely to be able to do something like that and
reach out to everyone during that time,
remind everybody that there's hope still.
Yeah, absolutely. We put hope on the little globe box on the piano and just hoped everyone would, get some strength from that.
And on the Check Love video, did you really hurt your hand breaking that mirror, that glass?
So Ricky looked fierce in that video.
He did.
Really fierce.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best looking videos that we did back in that time.
It's
pretty
tough.
We both look really great. I love it. I love the bathroom,
Scotland,
the black and white.
John style to the video. She's done it. I don't know if it's physical. There's a video of hers that's got a very similar kind of look.
I think both videos were done by Melanie Grant, I think.
Love putting that in the set. We used to go open it with it all the time, Checkered Love. And now we've realised that's kind of like throwing it away a little bit. So now we've sort of elevated it, and it kind of hits down further down the set now in a really great place with View from a Bridge and a few other songs. So
different energy live.
Do you remember that pressure at the time going back in terms of having to write a follow-up?
Oh, absolutely. And Mickey, obviously, he was the main man, and it was his decision alone as to what was going to be the follow-up single. And I must have written 15, 20 tracks, presented them to him as a possible follow-up, and each time he was saying, oh, it's not quite there, it's not quite there, it's close, but it's not quite there. And each time I'd come back and it'd be like, oh, God. And it was pressure on, big pressure on. Sorry. Checkered Love came, but again, quite quickly. I was still living at Mum and Dad's house at home, and they had this annex down the bottom of the garden. That's where I'd set up my studio, and I was doing all my writing. And I'd just go down there, and I'd spend a whole whole... I spent 3 days writing without any sleep at all. Literally just writing and I just didn't realise what the time was, and in my head I was kind of like so in the zone of just having to come up with something, and that's where Checkered Love came from. And so I had a little Tiak four-track recorder, recorded some guitar and put some guide vocals down, played it to Mickey and he said, "That's the one." And it's just like, oh, thank God for that.
We've got
that. Honestly, that pressure was was so
huge.
Huge.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what that was like. I can imagine. It makes me feel quite ill to think about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do look back on those days.
And that career, my career at that point, which had just had gone through the atmosphere, and then to be responsible for coming up with more hits all the time.
The thing is, I was astonishing. So terrified that you'd be a one-hit wonder. And that whole thing, that was my worst-case scenario. Yeah. Worse than anything is being a one-hit wonder. And so I was just so determined for that not to happen.
Well, these 41 songs so far say otherwise.
Yeah,
so.
Do you know what, amazing? Though?
Yeah, I still feel not under pressure, but so much. But it's my family and my sister, and you know, I didn't want to let Dad down. I didn't want to let Mum down, and everyone. And if I fell over, then basically it all fell over. So I did feel that pressure, and I look back on that, and I'm amazed that I actually did what I did.
But, you must have worked well under pressure is all we can say when you look back on it.
Looking back on it, I think I did strive on that pressure.
You did, absolutely. So we're almost there. We've got four to go. And I'm going to use the English pronunciation of this rather than doing a horrible pronunciation. It's Dream Lover, which is one of the bonus tracks on the second take of Become the Aliens.
Steve Lee I wrote that with, yeah. Yeah, Steve Lee's a wonderful, wonderful writer.
Actually, if you put it with another song, I would put it with Can't Get Enough of Your Love. It's the same kind of song, with a different close.
Was that always around that song in terms of...
Has it got
history to it?
Yeah, that was written years ago. That was quite a really old one. And Scarlett heard it. I'd given her a copy of the demo. And as we were coming up to do the album, Scarlett said, "Have you thought about doing Dream Lover?" I actually totally forgotten the song. And then she sent me a copy that I'd sent her, and I heard it. I thought, yeah, this could be really good. She said, "It could be great for Kim. What are you talking about?" And of course, she was right. It just sounded amazing. Yeah.
It went on the remix album, didn't it?
As a
bonus sort of track. Those remixes of the Alien tracks were, I think, amongst some of the best work Ricky's ever done, especially Cyber Nation War, which we ended up doing in its entirety as a 12-inch remix, or whatever it is you call it, a remix, doing the whole remix live.
Yeah.
It works so well. That was a magic era for us. I think the Here Come the Aliens, the Aliens live album, the remix album, everything.
That British tour,
just
doing
wonderful energy
and places that you
and the tour, the costumes, the whole thing. You know, we had so much fun, inflatable aliens. I mean, what's not to like? And the crowd, the fans got so into it, and with all the memorabilia, all the stuff that they would create.
It's wonderful.
It really sparked a lot of inspired people,
and the lights were incredible as well. The lighting story is a good one. I will say, I'm not going to name names, but we did have a lighting guy, and for whatever reason, right, like a day or 2 days before the tour was starting, he decided that he wanted to pull out, and he pulled out. And it's just like, oh my God. And we'd given him all the arrangements, and we thought he was all on it, and right at the last minute, he obviously wasn't. And then we managed to get hold of a guy called John Davis, and John, bless him, steamed in. He said, "Right, send me a CD rather or MP3s of all the tracks you're doing with the arrangements." And literally, he had 2 days to get that organised.
Wow,
it was unbelievable. And then that first gig we did, Kim's manager Sean Vincent, who was he's doing the sound, and obviously, so he's right next to John, and he's like watching the lights. And Sean was absolutely blown away. It was kind of like a different level light show that we'd had. And
was that? Did you start in the UK? So is that Ipswich?
Yeah,
it might have been Ipswich. Yeah, but yeah. So John did that first gig, and already that was like, oh my god! But by the end of the tour, it was just unbelievable.
There's some beautiful pictures. Absolute one I remember. Class. It's got the red and the green lights coming down. I can't think which venue you're at. It's just this stunning shot.
Yeah, amazing. All the photographs from that tour are just fantastic.
And that was all because of John. John Davis. Yeah. Just absolute class.
John Davis.
Well done, John.
Bless
you, wonderful man as well. So
we come to track 19, and I think Kim talked about this very briefly earlier on. It's Shine On, which is your new single, which Radio 2 have picked up and are playing, which is lovely.
Yes.
Lovely.
With the legend that is Mr. Boy George.
Yes. And we wrote it just before, literally within a week of lockdown, at the very first lockdown in March of 2020. And Freddie Tamanda has a beautiful Palmer Studios, I think it was called Palmer Studios, isn't it, in Mallorca. Anyway, he'd invited us over, and I said to Rick, come on, let's go and see what the studio's like, and let's write a few songs.
Beautiful studio.
Let's try and write a few songs to put on the new greatest hits. When you know, the great Cherry Red had already started collating it and getting licenses from various record companies and videos, blah blah blah. It was, you know, a huge amount of work. I said, come on, let's just like really rock them with a couple of tunes. Let's see what we can do. And we got on a plane and we went over there, and we stayed there for a week, and we wrote every day. And then I remember I was in the kitchen of the studio, and I heard the chorus of Shine On coming out through the room where we were working, and I just dropped everything. I rushed it. I said, what's that? And Rick had just written the chorus, Shine On, and the rest, well, it started off initially from a lyric point of view, which I came up with really quickly after a conversation Ricky and I had had, which was actually really sort of kind of a very personal relationship. It was about Barbara Windsor and her husband Scott, and how they had been battling dementia together. And it was a very, very moving conversation we had about it. So I based initially the first set of lyrics around that. Which is where the line about chemical demons and controlling the fire and her and everything. And then when we got back, the pandemic hadn't quite hit in. I actually went to Thailand with my daughter. And then Scarlett was listening to the song that we'd gone home with. At that time, it was quite ABBA-esque, and the tempo was quite up, if you can imagine it. It sounded great, but Scarlett listened to it. Ricky played it to her while I was in Thailand, and said, you know what, she heard it, and she said I think we need to take it down a totally different road. And I just fell in love with it, and it was like one of those Zen moments, you know, the love is a temple. I mean, I was sitting in temples, I was surrounded by temples, and it was all very much, you know, it was written in Thailand, actually, the rest of the lyric. So it came together sort of from different places. And then eventually, I mean, George had been contacting Ricky and I for some time about maybe doing a project. The right project never seemed to come along at the right time, either for George or for myself. And then by the time I got back from Thailand, we were in dead on lockdown. And the next thing I know, I'm doing a Zoom with George, and he's saying, come on, we've got to work together. Let's make this happen. Will you do this thing that I'm doing, this cool karaoke? Name and number. It's got your name on it and your number. And so I did that. And then I said, listen, George, I've got a greatest hits coming out, and I really want you on it. You know, I mean, there's not a bigger icon in the world, is there? And not a bigger pop icon, certainly, or icon than Boy George. And I was so proud and so happy when he said yeah. And when he loved Shine On, it was like, oh wow, this is going to be great.
And then his vocal came through. It was just like, oh wow.
It was magical.
Oh yeah. And before Scarlett had said, maybe we should change this and change that, I couldn't really get my head around that at first. It's kind of like, what? She goes, yeah, bring the tempo down, do this, do that. Oh, yeah.
Well, do you know, she was very inspired by Bon Iver at the time. And she was right on that. And she said, I want to create that sort of beautiful, haunting.
But it transformed the lyric. I mean, yeah. Just doing it in that with that treatment, it just really, it just made it so much more poignant, I think.
Yeah, it did.
A beaut to kick off this whole new package as well. So
it certainly sparked people's imagination. Yeah, I think, you know, and I think there's something really optimistic and great. I feel like we're the sort of the mum and dad of the 80s, you know, get together and, you know, just to kind of give, put a bit of joy back into people's hearts during such a bad time.
And your two voices together blend, just sounds so lovely.
They really do.
It really does.
That one's going to be another one that's going to live on and on and on. It's going to have a
I think so. It deserves to be.
And as you said, the lyrics can mean different things to different people.
Yes.
That one. Yeah. It's going to have lots of different meanings. Okay, two to go. Here's one that I know, Ricky, you weren't thrilled with at the time, but I know so many fans are happy that you've managed to include it because they don't have it before now, certainly being able to buy it. And it's Numinous.
It's out there, is it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm so pleased to break that news.
Yeah. I phoned up Sean when they were, you know, literally putting it to bed. I said, Numinous is on there, isn't it? He said, I don't think so. I said, well, I want it on there.
That I emailed him at almost the same time.
That's so funny.
Because I emailed him and said, Sean, I'm not going to meddle, and I know you've done amazing stuff on this, but is Numinous in there?
Well, the thing is, it was sort of a single because it came out in lockdown. Yeah. It kind of was a lockdown single, and it was what we could do, and I sort of made the video on my laptop and, you know, sent it over to Sean, and he did a lovely job on the video, and I'd always loved it when Ricky and I had made it.
So what's your problem, Ricky?
It was made at the same time as Here Come the Aliens.
Yeah, and it fits with that.
And we have a clip of it at the beginning of the album, you get to hear a bit of Numinous as first track kicks off. And Rick just didn't feel it was right for the album at that time.
Yeah, I didn't really hear it as a Kim Wilde track. I programmed it all up and wrote it as maybe a remix or something, and it's kind of like had a Basement Jacks kind of vibe to it, I suppose, and that was kind of like the main influence behind it. And I didn't really hear it as a song, as a track. It's more of a remix, I think. That's what the problem was, I think.
he heard it like that. I heard it as this great, great tune, and I really enjoyed writing the lyrics. And the word Numinous came up to me on a Twitter feed, which has every now and again, there's someone I follow who just puts up a word, you know, a word comes up, a new word that I wouldn't know. This beautiful word came up, Numinous. So I thought, that's a great word. When I found out what it meant, sort of in the presence of something spiritual and godly and something, you know, in the presence of something astonishing, I thought, well, that's exactly what happened to me when I was in my field looking up into the sky and seeing these orbs, whatever they were, flying in the sky. So I wanted to write a song specifically about that, and so I did. And it's one of my favourites. I'm so glad it's on there. I can't even tell you.
But she was fighting to have it on the album, and I was fighting for it not to be on the album. And so in you the end, we came in with a, well, how about we just feature a little bit before one of the other songs? And that's how we finished up. It's like a compromise, isn't it?
Yeah. And then luckily, because we were in lockdown and we weren't really seeing each other, or, you know, too much in contact. Obviously, we were in contact, but not so much. And I literally snuck Numinous on because I thought, I'm not going to tell Rick. I thought, I've already fought with him for years about this bloody track. I'm not going to fight. I mean, I remember in lockdown, you know, I wanted to put it out. I felt that it would be a great treat for the fans because they would know it straight away because they've heard it at the beginning of the Here Come the Aliens album, and they say, oh my goodness, that's what that song is, and it would be really, you know, fun for them. Anyway, so I snuck it on without telling
everyone. It's a bit of fun. It's
so
a bit of fun.
Pleased that you did.
Oh really? Oh well, that's lovely to hear.
I'll get my taxi. The final track on disc two is one I'm very sentimentally attached to already, and it's very new, and lots of people won't have, it's probably one of the only songs they won't have heard yet, as depending on with this lovely podcast goes to air, and it's called You're My Karma. And it's with a wonderful friend of ours called Tom Aspall. Kim, Ricky, tell me about this one. It's a beaut.
Yeah, well, I was in the lockdown, I just came into the studio and I thought, well, what am I going to do? I'm just going to write a few tracks and just put some guide vocals on it and see what happens with it. And Karma was, yeah, that was one of the first ones, I think, that I wrote. And I just love the vibe. It's had a really lovely summer vibe to it.
At the time, I think, because of the nature of the lockdown and, everyone's heads were in such a different place. It was so scary and unpredictable and just didn't know what was around the corner and didn't know, just didn't know what the hell was going on. And so I think, Rick, at that point, I was thinking about doing maybe a solo project or something so he was putting together some great tracks. And when I heard You're My Karma, I thought, this is a song that needs to be heard. When the Greatest Hits project was winding up, and we knew Shine On was on there, I thought, wouldn't it be great if we had two new songs? You know, it's great to have the past and represent it, celebrate it. I'm all for that. But let's just remind everyone that, you know, we're not all about the past. We're very much about what's going on now and heading off into the future. So let's put two new songs on there. We put Shine On with George, and I thought You're My Karma would be the perfect other track to put on there, by which time we had met Thomas Paul via Your Good Self, Lee.
Which was one of
the best introductions to any artist we've ever had, other than Frida Sandemo.
Yeah, I remember saying...
Also from yourself.
I remember listening to it and thinking that it would be really lovely to have someone new, some new artist or someone fresh and young. We'd done the Shine On with George, which was perfect. I just thought it'd be lovely to have another one with someone fresh and new. And so obviously I asked Your Good Self, Lee, who do you think would be amazing?
I think I got to the about 40 seconds in and I was like, this is Tom's record. This is Tom. He has to be on this.
Has his name written all over it.
And I thought, there's times when I've listened to Tom sing and I think he sounds like Green Gartside from Skritti Politti, who I know, Kim, you're a big fan of. And I thought these two could sound beautiful together. And he'd just done a very disco-influenced album in Black Country Disco. Yeah. And I thought, this is meant to be. You know, he's done a disco record. This is a disco song, really, at heart.
It is, yeah. And the Black Country Disco was just such a great album. It was my lockdown album. Really beautiful work on there. Beautiful singing. Singing, production, songwriting, imagery. I mean, he's got the lot. And we had a Zoom via Your Good Self and we're with you and Rick, didn't we? And bless him, there was Tom looking actually all a little bit shy. I couldn't believe it. I don't think I'll ever see him that shy again. certainly from not what I saw on Twitter last night. What a card he is. Anyway, so, wow.
Naughty boy.
When he sent back the ideas for You're My Karma vocally, we were over them. I mean, we couldn't get over it. He had brought so much to the table, backing vocals, other melody ideas.
Oh, amazing.
He totally transformed the song.
Yeah,
he did. I can't wait to meet him because I haven't met him yet. And then he released the Black Country Discotheque, which was all the remixes. And then I ended up, as you well know, Lee, getting involved in WM, which I believe was a bit of a close call because it could have been somebody else I've heard on the grapevine, who we won't mention. But luckily, Lee paved the way there for me. And what a great track WM is. And what a wonderful artist Thomas Paul is. I don't even know what I'll do when I meet him. I feel like I just might have to run up to him and just smother him in kisses. He's so gorgeous. So, yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the reaction to it. But already from the few people that have heard it, I think it could be very strong.
People are going to
And it's disco. How cool is that?
Disco is huge right now. Yeah. You know, not that it was ever... I always think disco never went away when people talk about a revival. It's always been there and influenced stuff throughout the years, but it's prominently there.
It's big back,
Jessie Ware, Dua Lipa have both taken that sound, Rasheed Murphy, and really, really brought it to the fore. Kylie's disco album.
Yeah.
And this just... It's disco, but it's a Kim and Ricky take on it.
Yeah.
With Tom, it's a smash. It's going to be the end of summer smash. You know, if we are unlocking, you know, let's hope that's in the right way, that we're unlocking. It feels like a good anthem for that.
It's a feel-good moment. George Michael-inspired duet with me and Thomas Paul, ready to...
with a Brothers in Rhythm remix.
Ready to be your soundtrack for summer.
That sounds exciting.
That could be good, couldn't it? Steve, are you listening?
Steve!
And joyful and optimistic, you know, because I think why be anything else after a time like this? And there's so much still to enjoy life, so many great concerts, so many careers, so many people's lives back on track to some degree. It won't be the same, but, you know, we all love to music. We all love live gigs. We all love what we do. You're My Karma, yeah. I think it will speak to a lot of people.
It will.
Yeah.
I hope you and Tom get to sing it together. That would be so much fun.
Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. And bless Tom. I mean, you know, he created and put that album out during lockdown, which is just incredible and so beautifully received. Everyone knows it's how great that album is. If you haven't heard it, anyone listening, listen to it because it is so cool, so good. Some great, great songs on it. And we're so proud to be involved, as Rick said, you know, with a legend that is Boy George, and then a new legend in the making, Thomas Paul.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you've both been very kind in letting me... We've come to the end of the second disc.
I'd just like to thank you, Lee, for all your work that you put into this. I know it's a very special moment for Kim and I to be able to talk about the old days, and it's just lovely to have you involved in it. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Lee, because, you know, through you we've met some amazing musicians and come across incredible music that we wouldn't have done otherwise. And certainly working with Frida Sandemo, which was just magical for us on Here Come the Aliens, on the track we worked on. And then now to work with Thomas Paul and for you to show so much enthusiasm for our work over the years, and it really means an awful lot to us. So thank you for representing us in such a lovely, powerful, positive pop way.
And also thank you so much for all the songs that you constantly bombard me with and giving me all the inspiration that I still have such passion.
We love the music. That's what it's all about. And Kim can work it out to retrieve them for my kids. She'll enjoy them too.
Oh, no, I do. I love it.
But you do. You send me over a mixture, all sorts, all different genres, and it's just so lovely for me to be able to keep in touch with what's going on the cutting edge.
You are the cutting edge.
Oh, bless you,
mate.
You
still are. You're still there. You know, when people get to hear very soon the amazing work you're doing with the other Nina, not the Nina we talked about earlier, that you've been working on since the Cynthian album.
Well, that's
when
exciting.
Folks get to hear that stuff, they're going to be blown away.
It's
incredible stuff.
Oh, well, I hope so. But but thank you for all your hard work and your belief and
there's no
your love
involved when I'm around you too. I promise you that. And this is the best bit for me. I get to indulge myself with, I call them wild cards with an E, a few songs to talk about from the massive selection that are across the deluxe version, which I just urge people to get hold of.
Yeah.
And I've picked some B-sides.
Let's talk about the B-sides.
You guys have, I truly mean this, an unrivaled selection of B-sides through the years in terms of the fact you've got a disc that could be someone's greatest hits disc that's just B-sides says absolutely everything. And I picked five of the ones that mean the most.
This is
going to
be fun.
Yeah.
So my favourite B-side is probably one that I don't think people talk about very much, but I'm going to describe it, and I don't know if you'll get it. So it's incredibly exotic. It sounds like I picture the nighttime on a tropical island. It's incredibly hot, but it's dark, and it's Loving You, which is the B-side. Just love it. It's so ethereal, and it totally would have fitted with the run of Slowies that was on side two of Another Step, that goes like Brothers Missing and How Do You Want My Love and Don't Say Nothing's Changed. It would have fitted so lovely in there, didn't make it for whatever reason, but it's one of my favourite B-sides. It's my favourite B-side.
The lyrics, it's interesting you should say Tropical Island, because the lyrics were written while I emotionally was on the Reunion Island, somewhere down there in the world, a beautiful volcanic island. And actually, yes, it was inspired by A Close Encounter on Reunion Island.
Well, whoever that person was, thank you for inspiring that song, because it's just, it's, you know, and the song is beautiful. Your production on it, Ricky, it's unlike, I can't think of another of your songs that it sounds like.
The lovely thing about recording B-sides is the pressure is off. You've already got the A-side, and it's just a lovely way of experimenting, trying something you normally wouldn't do. It gives you a lot of creative freedom in the studio. So I think it
shows too. I think it does. And the fact that they're featured on this package, you know, it's not because they couldn't find anything else to put on there.
No, they deserve their place.
They really deserve to be on there.
The second one I'm going to choose is a huge fan favourite. I think if you ask many fans, that it would be in their top 10 songs, irrespective of singles, and it's Birthday Song, which is obviously written for Scarlett. B-side to Love is Holy. If we ever get that anti-tour in 2023, that's got to be in the mix. That's a stunner.
Oh, well, we actually played that live, didn't we?
We did, one
of the tours. And it's always lovely. It's lovely to... lovely to play, but it's very special to me, obviously, because it's about Scarlett. The same thing. I'll just reiterate, when you know, just by the sheer nature of it being a B-side, it gives you a lot more creative freedom, and it's lovely to experiment like that on that track.
But it's interesting because I wrote it when Scarlett was still a child, very much a child, and I had no way of knowing that she was going to come into my life as my backing singer, my co-writer, my art director, my yoga teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just have a huge positive impact on my life in that way. So it's really incredible that song written to her as a child, and seeing her grow up and seeing the slings and arrows that have gone her way too. And that song has, I think, had resonance for her. And, you know, it was the greatest gift I could have given her.
And it'll keep giving that one. It's such a beautiful song. Aww. It really is.
Thank you.
It's one of my faves. The third one I've picked is one I sent you recently, which you'd completely forgotten. But it's an example of being ahead of your time in terms of the production, and you being ahead of your time with what you tapped into lyrically. So it's Virtual World, which is the B-side to It's Here. So this is 1990, and when this came out, and you read the lyrics and you hear what this is about, you know, talking about not being connected to people. Poor because of, you know, the digital age and everything. And I think, wow.
I agree. Lyrically, it's fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely fabulous. I remember when we first presented those lyrics, and it's just like, wow. It really did transform.
Actually, it was quite sort of Marty Wilde in a way, if you think about it.
It's
like Dad writing Tuning In, Tuning On, you know, and he was talking about sounds living and being alive, and, you know, some quite, you know, out there concepts. And at the time, the virtual world experience was still nearly a decade away, or maybe, of becoming some kind of reality or understanding what it might be. But there was a lot of talk about it at that point. And so, yes, it's really, that is one of the ones I'm really proud of, actually.
It's so true, especially with this whole pandemic thing and Zoom, all the Zoom calls that we're doing.
That's what made me think about it in terms of the internet has been so wonderful for us in the lockdown in terms of being able to connect. But at the same time, the thing that everyone has missed the most, we've realised we actually do quite like people.
We do
actually quite like being in the room. Even those of us that aren't always the most sociable previously realise how much we've
That's right.
That.
There's nothing like a live situation. Yeah. There's nothing like a live gig. There's nothing like going out for dinner with your besties. There's nothing like having a cup of tea with, you know, with your mates.
Yeah.
The real thing is the real deal.
The human touch, having a hug.
I had a hug with my son this morning. I mean, it's the most powerful thing.
It's the
most powerful thing. You can't. There's nothing can make it. That's more powerful than that.
Mm.
And I just come back to your production on it, Ricky, was ahead of its time for 1990. And it takes me back to Dream Sequence from 1983 and Catch Us Catch Can, which is your other kind of like, my golly, when you listen to that now, how ahead of its time is Dream Sequence when you listen to your production?
Mm.
Folks now would kill to make something as good as
that.
Bless you.
So filmic.
Yeah.
Actually, Virtual World, if I remember rightly, was inspired by Pink Floyd.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
We'd been listening to Money by Pink Floyd, and we kind of took it from there. I mean, you know, a lot of songs start from very clear places and others come together, a mishmash of stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's not plagiarism, it's just, you know, and, that, and it's just like recently there was a lot of talk about Elvis Costello and Olivia Rodrigo, and she had this song called Brutal, fabulous pop record, a little bit like an Elvis Costello, but not really, not in a million years. And then he stepped in to defend her. I mean, because we were talking about this to Rick, I was talking about this. So there's clear cases where people plagiarise and it's not acceptable. There are other times when people just are inspired. And that was a time where we were inspired by Pink Floyd and took it from there.
So my fourth choice of the five is from the Now and Forever era, and it's another, it's just a classic Kim and Ricky Slowey, it's Staying With My Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I love that song. Just,
it very fits with Hypnotize. Those two together are gorgeous.
It's a lovely song, you know. It's I mean, it's very Cilla Black. You can imagine classical. Her singing it, you know. It's very Dionne Warwick. You know, it's a great song.
So that's a lovely one for people to discover if they've never picked that one out. And then my last one I'm going to pick is, you've often described this kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of competition in your head between I'm rock chick, I love my pop, what am I, where do I fit in terms of I like to combine the both. And this B-side is the song I think that you managed to do both in one song. So it's Never Felt So Alive, which is the B-side to If I Can't Have You. And it starts off as this really gnarly rock song in the verses, and then out of nowhere, this airy, gorgeous pop chorus comes in that almost
it's
fit.
It's a bit like that Poppy track that you do. Do you remember the Poppy tears?
It's with like Marilyn Manson at the start and then Britney on the chorus. It's that. And I loved that because it is all of you in...
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's. I remember it now.
Yeah, it's ultra poppy chorus.
It's edgy and poppy at the same time.
Really not. Your vocal is really. Why do I seem to confuse you? It's really kind of aggro.
Danger.
Real rock
stranger.
Kind of,
Better left in chains.
Yeah. I love that. And then the chorus suddenly comes in and it's all high and lifted and light. And I don't care. I'm on my own. Who cares?
You know what? It's so true. That is that you were right to pick that one out. Well done, Lee. I think that is a really good, a card. This is wild card.
It's like all of your stuff rolled into one song somehow. To get every bit of both of you into one tune.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So
well
I
done.
Love it. So thank you for
thanks
indulging
for the memory.
Oh, not at all. Thank you.
My turn to say thank you. Not going to cry. I just want to say thanks for letting me do this today, first of all, because this has been just the most ridiculous walk down memory lane for me and hopefully for you. And my aim for today was for everyone listening to just tap into some memories they might not have heard of, you know, stories that they've not heard before and try and dig a bit deeper than before. But it's just, you know, on behalf of every of your fans, I want to say thank you for 40 years of being the soundtrack to our lives and just giving us more, you know, than we could ever have dreamed for. Whenever you guys decide it's time to stop, the legacy you've left behind will speak for itself for years and years and years to come. So I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done.
Bless you, Lee, and I know you speak for a lot of fans who'll be listening to this and you speak for them. And so I want to thank you on their behalf for doing that for them, because there's some really special fans out there, aren't there? And we do love you.
We love to connect.
We do.
The Wild
we do.
Fans are a good bunch to connect with.
Oh, they're amazing.
I've made some great connections with them.
And
loyal.
Amazing people.
Wow. Just so loyal.
Loyal big time.
And when we see their faces down the front of the concerts, we know everything's going to be all right.
And I've, there's never any atmosphere. We come together and it's always a celebration when we see each other. And I love that about it in terms of being a Wild fan is a privilege. And it's lovely to be part of that community. Oh.
Thank you, Lee.
Well, thank you
thank
very
you,
much.
Ricky
I feel a bit emotional after that.
I do as well. Isn't that great? Thank you, Lee.
Thanks
for Ricky.
Everyone, we'll be hopefully back with some more Unsung Heroes as and when we can.
We definitely will be back.
But today's is super special. So we've hoped you've enjoyed these two parts of Pop Don't Stop, the Greatest Hits, track by track, out August 6th. Get your order in if you haven't already. I'm booking the day off when it comes out to make sure I can enjoy it properly.
I think the Thomas Paul track's released on July 20th. 2023.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
I've got
pressure
a feeling
Ricky
it
to
is.
Get this out here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to have to go up to the West Midlands and find him.
Yeah, I love that.
Up to the WA.
One line.
It's only one line.
Only one line. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you both. This has been lovely. Take care, everyone, and have a great rest of your summer.
Take care, everyone. Yeah. Stay safe.
Lots of love to you all. Unsung Heroes. Wow, what an amazing chat that was, and how lovely to revisit all those old tracks. 14 studio albums, 40 years in the industry. Kim, you are a legend, absolute legend, and it's been an incredible musical journey for us both, really, and it's just a beautiful way to celebrate it. Pop Don't Stop, Kim Wilde's greatest hits, and makes me very, very proud to be a part of it. Anyway, thank you for joining us, and we hope that you can join us again soon on Unsung Heroes. Stay safe. Bye-bye. You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, Jake Wood and Lee Bennett. Produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions. With music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde. Artwork by Scarlet Wilde and hosted by Acast. Many thanks for listening. Unsung Heroes.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.